So g'day guys, it's Ryan and Hanu here from Aventi. I'm the partnership director, Hanu is the owner. And most people don't know this, but we're just over 2 years old. A lot of people think we're between 8 to 10 years old in the industry, but we want to do these episodes to start from the very beginning, let you guys know how we started, how the brand came about, and where we're going. So today, I think the best idea is start from the beginning. How did Aventi all come about, mate?
Is this an interview? It should be you two.
Well, I think that one.
We were in Noosa, right?
Yeah.
We're in Noosa.
That's Australia.
I wasn't living in Australia. I was more visiting. We were in Noosa at the time. And you were staying over at our place.
I just come back from overseas. I got quarantined for a few weeks. But before all that, like, where did the whole concept of Aventi come from, right? How did people want to know where we really got the first idea?
So
how it all began?
Well, I mean, look, it's that typical sketch on a napkin kind of thing, and we've talked about that before, where it was a combination of things. For me, it was like I love watches. Like, we both collect other brands. Like, we're not like hiding away from that. So you know, we had a few other watches, and I really wanted a sapphire piece, because like, sapphire pieces at the time were just like really gaining popularity in terms of, like, you had the Chatmel, you had the Hublot was just starting out back then. Mm-hmm. Not starting out, but they were getting popular. But I was looking into it, and I was like, what if we could make a sapphire piece, but not just, like, I thought that the current watches, that they didn't really make them work in the way that a gem would be, like an actual sapphire. So I thought, well, it'd be so cool to make a design that really looked crazy, something completely different from what's on the market. Not a round watch, not a tonneau, like just something our own shape.
Yeah.
And it would really resemble a gem. So it'd look crazy. And I don't know, it was weird. I had a dream in the morning and I kind of sketched out. It's like, okay, this is it. Like, this feels right. And it was, to be honest, like, what inspired me was the engine bay of a Lamborghini. So the when you look at the back of an Aventador, you see this cool, weird shape. And that's what kind of, like, it's not exactly the same, right? But it's got that, the element of that, looking at that, you know, the back of the Lamborghini. And I read a lot of books, I study a lot, I think a lot. I've got a lot of time to really, you know, I guess, develop thoughts and ideas and concepts. So one of the things that, because I have a few other projects, a few other businesses, and one of the things that I really try to do is try to make things easier, right? So in designing Aventi, it's like, okay, how can we subconsciously, we'll create something that will be accepted subconsciously and be palatable, but not so common. So I think that's what really helped us in the beginning. It's like, this is such a crazy shape, but something about it just worked, right? So there's a bit of symmetry to it. Asymmetry, it's
hard lines too, like a lot of facets.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And I really love that, you know, the whole story behind that beginning as well. And it's almost like we relate to that too. Not that we're taking from it, or that we're, I don't know, like, yeah, I think we're our own thing. Aventi is really its own kind of,
well, we like stories of these underdog brands, right? Where they have got told no, 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 time after time, and go, well, stuff you. We're going to go do it ourselves and see, and, you know, really make some noise. And this is a kind of similar stuff.
I mean, that's Aventi. The name of Aventi is like, I mean, you talk to Italian, native Italian speakers. I'm not Italian, right? I'm, you know, mixed, but I wanted to bring something of that European flair to it. And we're looking at creating a name, and the name itself, this is also an interesting story. I don't know, like, how much detail should we
I think it's really interesting to look at the
psychological aspect,
emotional,
right?
Psychological
views. Cool.
And look at, you know, consumer behavior and how people think.
And this is the kind of stuff that no other brand will ever talk about, because it's all about magic and mystique, and, you know, these watchmakers in the Alps, like, grinding away, creating these amazing creations. And that we have that magical element to us, but also people have to understand that we are 2 years old, and what we've done is no accident. We've engineered everything, every step of the way. We've created this, and where we're going, that's, I guess, the purpose of these recordings, is to really share the vision and the and the structure that we have driving this force, and to so show that, I mean, we're in Dubai now, I don't know if you can't see on the camera, but these buildings are towering. We're in one of the biggest buildings in the world, right?
Yeah.
And these, you know, buildings are towering around us. And the only reason for the success in a country like Dubai, or in a city like Dubai, is that you have the foundation, you have the structure, you have the systems and processes in order to be able to create this incredible, you know, success around. And it's the same with Patek, Rolex, Richard Mille, AP, or all of these brands, all of these main brands, billion-dollar companies. What they have all in common is that they have that foundational structure, that system, processes, the rules, the regulations that drive the business. And that's everything that we, from the day that we've started to now and where we're going, is exactly what, you know, me personally, I have been building with, you know, the teams and the different things that we're involved with, right? And so in order to, coming back to the name, for example, this is an interesting one, right? Because Aventi in Italian, it's like when, I like to create things. I'm like a musician, right? And like classically trained, I play the cello. And, you know, from a young age, I've always been just into that creativity, right? So one of the fun things about, you know, having a bit of freedom and time is that you can create cool things. I'm working on other projects. I don't want to go into any details because it's off topic. But creating brand names is one of the things that I spend time doing, right? And so when you create a brand name, like if something like Aventi, you have to understand, like the design, it has to be palatable, has to have elements of, I guess, to be accepted and understood by a lot, to feel familiar, and to be something inspiring and meaning behind the name. So Aventi is a name, a lot of people, when I was testing the name, thought they heard of it before, and even you.
A lot of people,
think that they've
heard that before, or they had already thought they'd heard of that brand. Isn't that years? I've heard about Aventi for years. What are you talking about? And there's no.
Maybe there's some, you know, some random.
There's Avante, which some people get confused with, but it's not Avante. It's Aventi.
This is going to sound wacky to a lot of people. I think one of the cues that I looked into it, was like, has this word been said before? And people in America, people familiar with Starbucks, there are sizing systems to their drinks. And Aventi is something that's said on a daily basis by...
That's the large one, yeah?
Yeah.
And everyone orders large coffees in the US market and elsewhere. So it's a commonly said word.
I mean, these videos, these, I don't know, podcasts, whatever you want to call them, these are to show an insight into what it really takes and what it really means to build something, and not build it in a way where it's a magical, some mysterious thing that just happened and, like, oh, it's an investment type of piece or whatever. It's understanding the engineering of, you know, psychology within a product, a brand, because at the end of the day, we don't need any different type of car other than something with wheels and capacity to take us from point A to B, right? Yeah. Why do we have color choices? Why do we have all these other things? There's psychological elements and other, you know, other items at play. Labeling and hierarchy of social status comes into it as well. It's like, where does this car or this house or this whatever it is fit in with my belief of who I am compared to other people in this world that we live in? And so watches is so fascinating, the watch industry, is because it is a signifier. It's something where it tells other people around you in society that, you know, of your status. I mean, that's kind of, you know, what it is, more or less. Or I wear G-Shock, so I'm this type of person. Or I wear AP, I like G-Shocks, but I got a lot more money. I'm joking, right? Like, I don't want to.
That angel, you said to the team the other day, look, there's a lot of familiarity with that word Aventi, and it can't be something that's too outlier, right? Because people will forget or switch off.
Yeah, I mean, coming back to building a brand, when you test names, right, one of the things is I tell someone a name, and I don't tell them to remember. I don't say anything. I say, what do you think of this name? And then about like 10, 20 minutes later, I'll say, what was the name? If they can't tell me that name back, then I drop the name. Yeah. It's just you want, with everything that we do with Aventi, everything has to be sticky. It has to be sticky as in memorable, has emotional stickiness to it. So it's like a visceral experience with Aventi. It's like there's something about it, right? Mm-hmm. And we are engineering that, like on a daily basis. We're improving it. We're also, we feed, just like, so imagine if you drive a car down the highway or get to your friend's house, and you know that your way to your friend's house, right? You could use GPS, whatever, right? But now if someone puts a blindfold over you and says, drive, you won't, like, how far will you get? Like, even someone sitting next to you telling you which way to go, without that, without those eyes open, you don't have that, the ability to quickly adjust the feedback, take different routes. Maybe there's a blocked road, right? This is how we are operating. Just, we have structure, but we also have that ability to adjust and change. So when it comes to branding, that was a big part of it. It's like, we need to really go out there and get feedback, understand. Instead of someone just deciding, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to, you know, call it this, and it's going to behave in this way, and like, be very rigid. Mm-hmm. I had to be, you know, very open to changing. I think we had a whole bunch of other names for the brand, but, you know, once you test it, you get the feedback. You can see, okay, this is the right direction. Okay, let's move forward. I mean, even getting the domain, like aventi.com.
Oh, yeah.
That's another story, because aventi.com was taken. It was like someone else had it. And so we had to basically buy it for a pretty penny.
Yeah.
You know, and then I said, I think you were like, why are you spending so much money on it? .com, like a domain. I said, bro, you're not going to go RolexWatches.com. Mm-hmm. You know, it devalues. So a lot of the decisions that we made, we have to invest a lot into, and that was like a lot for the time. It's huge amount of money.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Especially the other
day. And so you have to do it. And otherwise people won't take it seriously. So then through that, we got the trademark. Trademarking is very important in business as well.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we got the trademark as well as the domain. Then we were able to claim the social handles. So now we have control over our perception. And this is the other psychological aspect to what we're doing, right?
Yeah.
So,
and going back further, guys, that's just touching a bit about the name and cues and some things we didn't talk about too, the Italian meaning and having, and there's more.
So, I mean, you've got that psychological aspect, but I mean, with any kind of persuasion, you need to have, there's a simple model that I thought of. It's not just I thought of it. I think you have to, like, if you sit down and think long enough, you'll get to the same conclusion. But you need emotion to really cause something inside of you to stir you, to push you somewhere. But then to rationalize an action, to take that step, you need logic, right? You need the logic to be able to justify it. I mean, look, it comes down to, like, maybe a guy wants to, like, I don't know, I'm thinking of examples. Maybe a guy wants to go up to a girl. He feels he wants to go up because he's really attracted. That's not enough for him to go up, right? Because then he has fears and all these other things that come up, all these other emotional components. But if there's a logical reason, this person's looking at this thing and, like, oh, I can think of a reason, like, okay, then you are able to take the action. That's one example, right? Other examples are, like, you got to convince somebody else that it's a good decision. So the what's called, like, rationalization comes into play. It's like, how do I rationalize this, right? And so with Aventi, you've got the logical aspect. So the emotional aspect, subconscious, it's like this, you have, what is it called? Sandwiching. So sandwiching our brand with other high-end brands to create the emotional aspect. There's a lot of work that we do with that.
Yeah.
But then also the logical aspect of why, and to rationalize the emotion. So why you feel this way is because what we're doing is something different to other brands. And that's what we've, you know, centered our campaigning and our communication around is that Aventi, and in Italian, this is what I started to explain before, but got sidetracked. In Italian, it can mean to have or having, or, and some other Italians, it's not really a fixed word to my understanding. It's not like Aventi dictionary means this.
Yeah.
It's more like it can be meant in certain ways, and someone else told me.
The Italians will be commenting later.
Yeah, we need clarification.
Sure.
No, I mean, we've asked. I mean, as I said, we're not Italian, right?
Yeah.
But to have, having, and also with movement and to move, to go somewhere. So it's like this feeling.
Move forward?
Something like that. Yeah. And so we have this idea, this concept that we're moving forward, but also to be able to have something that normally you never be able to have. Like, and that's a watch game right now. I mean, this is something that we need to really clarify, because even the way that we explain, we're treading on eggshells. How do we show that we're exclusive and selective with our family, but also give the opportunity for other people to join the family, right? And this is basic economics when it comes to, you know, I guess resale value and like just the markets of the watch economy. And I was explaining, I can't remember who I was explaining. Oh, it was the other night we were talking about this. We were saying that you have the watch resale market being the primary logical driver of purchases right now. But, you know, someone asked me, well, how do you prove Rolex was so successful up to today? Well, the logical driver of Rolex prior to right now was, and they're the pioneers. Rolex leads, everyone follows. Like, they are the best. Like, they are the best. Everything. Like, we aspire to become that level one day. And we will, because we are systematically breaking down and understanding every single condition, core component, requirement that Rolex has set up. And we're on our path there, right? Every single detail. So that's what we're working on. But coming back to my point is that before this whole resale market focus that everyone was tapped into now, like everyone's, you know, and it's relatively simple to do. Control the supply, wait for the demand to increase, find ways to increase demand, slowly drip out the supply, monitor resale values. Done. And say, okay, that's simple, right? But what about before this? Why were people buying Rolex before this whole investment craze that's happening right now? And it comes down to a representation of success. It's a symbol of success. Coming back to my point about labeling and the position, and that is one element. That's where price comes to play. That's why, I mean, Rolex has systematically increased their prices year on year and for decades, right? It's what they cost now is nowhere near what they used to cost. I mean, taking into consideration, inflation is still, I believe, higher than what it should be on a ratio base.
Yeah.
But we're coming from a time where watches were primarily a symbol of success. Or even before, I mean, people would say, oh, no, it wasn't success, it was a practical use to tell the time. Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah. Right now, I remember asking someone, oh, what's the time? You got a watch on the wrist, check the phone. Like,
You don't even
set your time.
When you ask someone for the time, you'll see that most people will pull out their phone.
Yeah.
Or they'll double wrist, they'll check their smartwatch right before their actual watch.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to symboling and labeling and all of that. But I mean, looking at what Aventi means and the type of the you know, the position that we have is so unique right now. There aren't any other brands that have done what we've achieved in the amount of time that we've achieved it.
Yeah. In 2 years, a lot of brands just go retail model. They want to pump the brand out there, get it in as many hands as possible. Mm-hmm. We're doing the opposite. No retailers, concierge. We've got to step back, right? That's touching a bit about the naming, but we didn't just pull Aventi out of thin air, guys. We just didn't just come out of this brand within a month and then make it, launch it, and here we are, right? We've had a lot of previous experience to thank to where we are at this point. And this goes over 8 years. Even in the watch industry with other brands, we've also traveled the world, been at many luxury boutiques, retailers, experienced customer service, experienced how they showcase pieces, how they operate. We've done a lot of homework and research, market research has gone into this on all aspects, even into pricing, to materials, to...
I mean, even like Ryan is the king of, I mean, the watch market right now. You're understanding of the watch market is much better than mine right now, whereas I kind of like pulled you into it, and before, you know, you were introduced into the watch game, you had no idea. But then I guess for a lot of people watching this, especially new collectors, new people in the game, it's like, for you, it's like so fascinating understanding what price point, what designs, what complications, what reasons these things cost so much money, right? And a lot of where we've been blocked a lot in Switzerland, you know. So we've had deals fall through, people pull out, like people get essentially scared of what we're doing, because in a way we're threatening that whole, you know, we're lifting the iron, we're peeking, slightly opening the iron curtain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what really happens in Switzerland and what really goes on with, you know, the product pricing, product manufacturing, the standards, and how it actually works. And I think maybe we can, if you want to touch on that, we can touch a bit on that.
Well, yeah. That,
otherwise, so, this is going to go on for...
Well, yeah, before creating the brand, right, we had a lot of barriers to entry, and this was mainly in Switzerland. We had developed great partnerships around the world with suppliers of materials, quality control, and making watches, etc. And this really helped us start get off the ground, right? We made other brands before, and still to this day, that are more compete with your G-Shock and Victor type brands, sub $500 watches, but high quality and better materials. And so we used that experience coming into the luxury watch space, but we didn't start off there. Hey, when we first launched, we launched at an interesting time during peak of COVID. A lot of businesses going down the drain, out of work. And we launched on a crowdfunding site. So yeah, so let's talk a bit about that, why we did that. And just so you guys understand, we have zero funding. This is all on us, right? There's no outside investment, nothing like that. So we launched on a crowdfunding site for one pure reason, was to gauge the market, see the level of interest in this brand, get the exposure, and then go from there. But in hindsight...
Look, I mean, I've built a model based on our success, and that model is very simple, and it works, really. I think, and that's the other thing, is like when you... I mean, this is an analogy. I like to talk in stories, like... A lot of people look at a tree, like you say, I mean, this is a silly way to put it, but they look at a tree, they see the business of it, and they say, oh, the business has this, it has this, it's that, and, you know, it looks good. And then they look at it, it's like looking at a tree and going, you know what, that tree's got branches, it's got leaves, it's got, like, roots, it's got all the, okay, I'm going to try and build that and put it together. It doesn't make sense, right? It's like, you forget that the tree started from a seed, and the seed was watered and was taken care of by the sun, air and all of that, and it grew in the way that it grew around the environment. Yeah, it gets to the tree and it maybe looks a bit like the other tree, but the way that it got there would have been completely different, right? And so that's the way that we got to where we are today and where we're going is through that process of having a vision and direction, but not being fixed to a set way of getting there, right? So one thing that I noticed for what we did in the beginning, we had to do what we did. I mean, we did a crowdfunding campaign because I didn't want to risk, you know, putting a lot of investment. Like, all the projects I do, they don't have, like, they have no investment. Like, there's almost no capital put up. And the way that I do business is that I start something, and if I can't get it working without putting any money into it, then it won't work. Money doesn't solve or make things successful. People think that, and it's a correlation. They think, oh, if I have money, I can, you know, create something, I can build something. A lot of people think that we invested $2-3 million or more into building Aventi, all that just stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas we started with virtually nothing. Like, it was like really not much, like at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we took it from there is we had to find the smartest ways to do what we want to do. Of course, you see all these haters at the top. It's not a, you know, your first watch wasn't a Swiss movement. No, it's not serious. It's not a real tourbillon. That's not a real tourbillon. It's like, what do you mean? What's a real tourbillon?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the difference if something is made somewhere or made somewhere else, if we make sure that it's made in the best way? It's not the country where it's made. It's who's making it, how they're making it, and the performance of it, right? And so what we do, we went to our partners and we said, look, we got this crazy idea, we want to work with you, but we want to do this is what we're going to do differently. You know, we want to improve this, we want to do, and everything that we do, everything that, you know, we create, we stand by it. It's very different to, I guess, how a lot of other businesses run. They go, okay, we need profits, we need margin, we need volume, we need this, we've got investors. We don't have all of that. We don't have that extra, we don't have that pressure on us, right?
Yeah.
We don't have what other companies and brands have. Board of directors that sit down and say, no, we need to increase the bottom line, we need to do blah, blah, blah. We don't have that. It's just, like, hey, what are we doing next? Like, yeah, what do you want?
We have a lot of freedom in that aspect, guys. But, yeah, in that beginning stage, when we launched on, before the Indiegogo, we had some people got some steals.
Oh, great deals. Yeah, and that was crazy because I didn't want to make money. Obviously, we want to make money, but a lot of the product, I was like, what's the quickest way to get a lot of attention, a lot of people interested is to put up a price for the products that's unbelievable. So our titanium version.
So we took a loss in the beginning. Yeah. We took a big loss just to get the name out there.
Well, look, let's be clear. It was a loss, but it wasn't I wouldn't say it's a big loss. I think there was no profit. There was no profit in it. So there was no gain. Like, just to be clear, because, we had to come from somewhere, right? We had to build our reputation and we essentially proved the model. Now, when you invest, you should essentially, I think if you have a business, you should always ask for money when you don't need it. If you need money, you're in a bad position, right? Yeah. And so when you don't need it, that's the best position to make negotiation or anything like that. But I had some, I could put some funds into it then and grow it, right? Because I knew that this is the horse to battle. Like, this will work 100% because we just proved it. And that was the whole point. It's not that we made a huge loss. We some of these pieces were. Now they're reselling. Some people have, I know this because we monitor all of our customers. We monitor the resale market. We monitor everything. We're watching everything because we have to. It's our responsibility because I don't want our pieces to devalue. Like, that's for me. It's like, yeah, that's one aspect of the brand. Of course, it's not everything. That's not everything that we're focused on. It's something that's very important to me that people feel like they're investing in something. They feel like if I buy this, I will be able to sell it when I want, when I need, and get what I put in back or more, right? But I don't want people to actually do that, And that's the chicken, not the chicken and egg, but that's the funny thing. It's like, I know that this piece is now worth, so much more. And this has happened with Rolex, AP, Patek, everyone. But they don't sell it because they know that, and that's the irony in the situation, is that they know they can sell it, but they won't sell it because they like that fact. And that's why it kind of worked. It's another psychological aspect that we've been looking at as well, right? Mm-hmm. So, coming back down to production, manufacturing, maybe that's what we wanted to talk about. But we essentially found ways to produce with the right partners all around the world. So we work with people from, Japan, even Germany, now in Switzerland, right? Before it was a bit Hong Kong. All over, like Russia.
Switzerland in the beginning just wasn't open to change, right? It was their way or the highway, jumped through their hoops, abide by their rules and regulations, and was very strict, apply for this, maybe we'll think about it, here's the top dollar price, so it just wasn't.
Millions. If we built the Venti in a way that is a logical way to build without any creativity or any thinking involved, we would have hired an agency to come up with a name. We would have consulted with middlemen in Switzerland to find the right people to do the project, right? All of this would have been $2-3 million
easily.
Yeah. And we would be left with no customers and no one willing to take the risk in buying the stock.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars in stock as well as the branding, as well as, then we go, oh, we have all this stock, but we can't move it. Let's hire a marketing agency now to sell the stock. Suddenly they charge all this money. You're paying a retainer. You're moving stock slowly, then you're paying for this and paying for that. And then before you know it, you're 10 million down and you've got some little bit of success coming now, right?
This was fun too because we were disrupting the watch industry with our unique design, unique materials, it was a rare watch. Our price point, we wanted to create something with exceptional value. Yeah. This was really where we first shook the market up was the value aspect, right? No one else could beat us on Sapphire and all these. But we stand behind the Hong Kong movement. We love it. It's great. It's performed very well.
So coming back to the materials and the movement and all the components, the main thing to realize is that we're responsible, not our partners, not the countries, nothing like that. It's us. Yeah. So if there are any issues, people come to us, we fix them, if there are any.
Yeah.
If there are anything at all, people come to us. So it's our responsibility, not where it's made or any of those things. It's us. It's our brand. That's what's important. A lot of people don't know this, but a lot of car companies did, and I actually met someone in Hong Kong when I was there. He was working, he was very high up in marketing, actually, and he was working with Mercedes Group or BMW or something. Look, I don't want to mention any names just because it's like a bit fuzzy memory, right? But the way that he was explained to me is that they did market research to figure out what parts of the car can be built in other countries that won't affect the emotional connection to the car being built in Germany or wherever. Yeah. And they found like certain parts of the car, like for example, the transmission could be built in Thailand and shipped over to Germany for a second. And it's no different.
Yeah.
And so, I thought, look, a lot of, and there is a reason for using these, and it's not for us to go, we need to go find cheap slave labor. No, it's not about cheap labor. It's about the infrastructure, the setup. This is not us. We're not going to, you know, all these countries, all the different countries outside of Switzerland and going, hey, let's go there because it's cheaper. It's not like that. It's like these guys have set up factories there from Switzerland. They've set up the infrastructure. They've done all the work. They've done it because it is, at the end of the day, more cost effective. But also they bring with them the experience and the know-how to build this environment where you've got plating happens here, production of, you know, steel or whatever happens, dials happen here. And they're all in the same area. A lot of people don't realize that. You go to Switzerland, same thing.
Yeah.
So what they've done is that a lot of brands and companies actually have gone into Asia and other countries like Malaysia, China, Hong Kong, or, you know, other European countries, right? They've set up their factories there, but they still essentially have subsidiaries or even the head offices in the major countries. A lot of people don't know that it's actually still being processed in these other countries. So they act almost like a buffer to shield the whole made in this first world country, whereas they're outsourcing to more effective places where they can leverage the scale of, you know, other companies working together and sharing the resources, right? And so a lot of people don't know that what actually happens in manufacturing. Manufacturing, this, you don't have one person, one entity that produces everything, like very rare.
Yeah.
Like even Beauvais is a brand we love, right? Mm-hmm. Very underrated, very amazing. And they have bought out all the companies, essentially, that put their piece together from step one to step 100, whatever. But even still, they're not working only for Beauvais. They work for all these other guys, right? So the interesting thing, and just because Beauvais own those companies doesn't mean it's Beauvais, right? It's just as a corporate structure, right? So in reality, besides from like a handful, I don't know, maybe two or three brands, there's no one that makes everything in their watch, period, right? The from balance wheels to cages to screws to plates to hairsprings, every single part is made by some other company. We were chatting with the guys and they'll say, oh, we got this supplier for this part. Yeah, they're producing 600,000 units of this. You know, we can, you know, adapt for our next movement. They're producing 600,000 per year, so they're pretty reliable. Well, I was, you and I were going, 600,000? Who are they selling to? And this is not a quartz watch. This isn't a basic watch. This is a Swiss complication, right? This is a part that goes inside a Swiss watch, right? A major component. And so it's like 600,000. Like, who's producing in those volumes? Like, it's going across into brands that we know.
Yeah.
And that's where we are very confident in saying that we are getting the same parts in our Swiss movement that are being used in these top-tier Swiss watches, right? Mm. And that's kind of where we're at the moment. It's just like, how can we keep pushing our quality? How can we keep creating? And this is the whole thing about in-house, not in-house, right? And this is where we've got like people probably on these comments today who's going to be, oh, you're not in-house. You're not really, you say you're in-house. It's like, okay, tell me what in-house is. You know, what is in-house, right? There's no one that uses our movement. No one that can fit our movement into their watch. This is 100% our design, 100% our complication, right? This is how we developed it with our partner in Switzerland, who is, you can go through Olivier, maybe.
Yeah, Olivier Maribor.
Yeah.
He came from a lot of different backgrounds to where he is now, you know, but we're not talking about the Swiss movement today. We've just gone.
Okay, we'll do that another time.
Is now where we came from, how we got to now. And the idea is, guys, to have these episodes come out every few weeks and just elaborate more on behind the scenes, the brand, where we started from, how we got to now, and where we're going. And so we want to just
behind the scenes talk. So we finish up the start, right? So we've covered the brand name. We've covered the crowdfunding.
Where we come from, partners. If there's things you guys would like to go to, mention it. Why we did a Tourbillon. Hey, why did we do a Tourbillon?
Yeah, Tourbillon was...
Yeah, we could have done an automatic movement. We could have done any movement. And we got offered, we won't talk about it today, but we got offered the same movements in some of these big brands. And we've been invited to the factories. And this happened later. In the beginning, these guys didn't want to work with us, so they made it hard. And another reason why we like to create value is because when we went to go for the Swiss movement, they want to know how much we're going to sell the watch for. And told them the price, they go, no, it's too cheap. You can't charge that. You have to charge this much. And this is how the pricing across
is. Yeah, that's the crazy part.
A lot of people don't know this, but a movement maker will be making 5-6 movements for different brands, right? And they make you fill in an application and tell them how much you're going to sell the watch at before they approve to work with you, because they can't undercut the other guy that they're making for.
Yep.
And this is why originally, we went to Hong Kong, we worked with PTS Resources, we calibrated the movement, right? The finishing on it, brushed finish, was perfect. We loved it. It's aesthetically pleasing.
Like, I'm wearing it. Yeah. I mean, this is a very special piece. I don't know if you see that, but it's a gem set, the first gem set of Venti piece with rubies, emeralds, and sapphires, and no one's done that. No one, to my knowledge at least, has done set rubies, emeralds, and sapphires, and let alone set this piece. This piece is set in steel, and this is Hong Kong movement, and this is incredible. And I think this is my favorite watch anyway.
Yeah.
But I guess the point is, like, I've got a lot of watches across other brands. I wear other brands as well.
In the beginning days too, we came in as watch enthusiasts, right, and collectors. Hanu actually got me into luxury watches in the beginning. We both come from different backgrounds. But the point being is we come from nothing. We don't come from money. We come from modest families. So we were always about value, right, growing up. I think my first watch, and we have clients too, right? You don't have to come from money and have all these luxury pieces to get into the game. Everyone's got to start somewhere. I remember my first nice watch that I bought for myself as a present was a Raymond Wheel. I think this thing cost me like $2,500, right? This was when I entered the luxury watch game. And since then, I've expanded and got a lot of great pieces from different brands. But we look at all this, we look at what they do right, what we think could be improved, and what we like to implement into the brand. But Hanu was the same, came from, what was your first nice piece, actually?
Panerai,
yeah, you got into Panerai
first.
And then it blew up from there.
A bit crazy from there. We're talking Platinum Daytonas, all the crazy stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But the main thing, I guess what I'm trying to say is that the other day I was wearing a 10, right, which is our lowest price point when we released it.
Yeah.
Now it's hard to get because we're really careful who we allocate those to. And that's a 2,000 USD piece, but now they're recent. I saw one for $8,000 that was listed on Chrono. And I think it is worth like a lot because we're not producing that one anymore.
Yeah,
that specific
this year sold out. So
this year sold out, and we don't know. We may discontinue when we're bringing more pieces. So anyway, the point is. And I was talking to Andaloom on that A10. It's just like, you cannot compare with anyone. Like, and that's just not me saying it. So I haven't seen anything with such cool loom. And that was the thing, like, making the A10s and A11s, right? A11's sapphire. I'm like, how do you compete with sapphire? Like, sapphire's insane. I was like, do you know what? Let's put crazy loom around the case. Two lines, like Tron. I wouldn't be like... And like even last night, just glowing on the depth. It's just insane. It's like 2 to 3 millimeters depth in a groove around the case, like of loom. No one puts that much loom in anything. Loom is so much money, right? Yeah. So I mean, that was a lot of the cost went into loom. Actually, a lot of people don't like. They're like, oh, we need to mark it up lower. I was like, look, let's make it like a fun piece. Make it. Really, really unquestionable value, and make it for people who really love this, want to be different, right? And at that price point, you can't.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think you can beat it. Like,
that's it, guys. We looked at all these other brands charging ridiculous money for tourbillons, ridiculous money for sapphire, and we said, look, what the hell? 11, 12 times 10x margins on pieces.
More.
Yeah, more. When we were working with 2 to 3 at the most.
Yeah.
So that's another reason too. People really appreciated the value aspect that we provided, including something different in the watch world.
Yeah.
You know, like now some brands are expanding, they're doing different things, and it's great. We wish them all the best. It's great to see now that people are trying different things. not just all trying to copy different dial colors and same brand watch.
I mean, the whole watch industry right now, like, right now, we're going to probably look back at this video in, like, what, a few, 10 years, 5 years, whatever. Who knows? Is it going to be the same? Or is it going to be crazier? Or is it going to, are we going to be in the metaverse, like, showing each other watches that we've got NFTs of, right?
Yeah.
So the whole point, I mean, even making that statement shows that Aventi, we're on the edge of what's happening in reality for our family. And it's it, like, everything is about community. Everything is about being in touch. So, I mean, if you have comments or if you have ideas or suggestions, write them down or let us know. I don't know where we're going to publish this. Like, I guess I'd like to put up a podcast. We could do this. I would like to do this on a weekly basis. And that's why we set it up. We've got these mics now and we're upping our like effort in this. Yeah. But this is something where it gives us an opportunity. Like I said before, it's like when we're driving, we need to keep our eyes open. We need to be able to get feedback and adjust our course according to, you know, according to what's happening. And this is different. Like all these brands, you can see them as Titanics, right? They're all Titanics. Rolex, AP, RM, blah, blah. They're Titanics, right? If they don't turn soon enough, they have to turn a lot earlier than someone like us. We're on our like beautiful wooden speedboat. We can turn directions anytime we want, right? Because we don't have to answer to anyone. We don't have corporate to answer to. We don't have. I mean, that's all being built, and it will be established, but it will be established in a way that makes sense, right? But for the time being, we're able to adjust and change course very quickly, so we can produce a lot of progress, right? But it's our responsibility for our family, our customers, to build our version of the Titanic that will survive, you know, survive for hundreds of years. And that's what, you know, what I really want to do is, and to use the, you know, the information, knowledge and the experience that I've had with all these other projects and all these other things that I've done, and to build this as, it's almost like its own entity that just, that has a soul, you know, as a brand, and doesn't need anyone to be behind it to drive it. It drives itself, right? And that's the whole point. And that's the value in, like, the long-term value of Aventi and being part of this journey and having a piece. And the meaning of this piece and the watch and the design and everything about us is that we're representing something that's moving forward and into the future, and it's so much more than what we are now. So, yeah, there are people that bag us and talk crap about us online, and honestly spreading misinformation. Like, a lot of the information they share is just really it lacks substance. Like, oh, this person's marketing claims. It's like, what has that got to do with the product? You know, what has that got to do with what we've built, where we've come from? A lot of these people like attack us for, you know, what reason, I don't know. Like, we're doing our best, like, and we're watching everything. We're improving it. Why don't you tell us what to improve on, you know? And then, you know, people deleting comments. And when we reply, we're putting our time, effort, and energy, and the comments are being deleted because it makes them look silly, right? So when stuff like this happens, it's like, okay, well, look, you're not going to win everyone, right? And for the people that are watching and making their minds up about our brand, like, yeah, I mean, this is another reason why we're doing this, is because we need to be heard. We need to say the truth and, you know, show that, you know, where we are now and where we're going is huge. And if everyone had a chance right now to buy the first Rolex pieces, right, knowing Rolex, where Rolex is now, everyone would say yes. Everyone. But back then, they were making pieces from other movement suppliers. They were working with other people. In a lot of ways, it's similar to us, where they were just adjusting and fixing and correcting and growing in that way, right? So I really believe these first pieces are going to be, like, they're significantly undervalued right now, looking at the trajectory that we're on. So,
And on that note, guys, yeah, we wouldn't be where we are now with all the buzz. There's lovers and haters to any brand, and if it's not for you, they're down to personal taste on the line. That's totally fine. But we will always continue to focus on the quality, the production, the new models, and you cannot argue the value whatsoever. So on that note, guys, I hope you enjoyed the first episode of just behind the scenes, the start of Aventi. If you'd like to
behind the hype.
Yeah, behind the hype Aventi.
We're gonna call it.
So let us know if you guys have questions, fill it in. We're gonna do these more frequent. We're gonna deep dive and peel back the layers behind the brand and where we're going. And yeah, stay tuned. Follow
Thank
us
you so
and
much.
We'll catch you guys soon.
All right. Thanks, Brad.